Father," she said quietly. "I'll find you something to eat." She offered her arm and didn't seem offended by his staring. She took him to a small side room with a narrow table for the servants who needed to be within earshot of the kitchen. Calmly, she told a woman 10 years older than she was that she needed her to take over while Eline took care of her guest. From her tone and the older woman's reaction, Kylar could see that Eline was adored here, and that she took care of beggars all the time. "How are you, Grandfather? Can I get a salve for your hands? I know it's painful on these chilly mornings." What had he done to deserve this? He'd come as the most foul sort of beggar, and she showered him with kindness. He had nothing to give her, yet she treated him like a human being. This was the woman who had almost died because of his arrogance and stupidity. His failure. The only ugliness in her life was because of Kylar. He'd thought he'd set aside his guilt 2 years ago when Mama Kay had told him the simple truth that he'd saved Eline from worse than scars. But looking at those scars up close threatened to throw him right back to that hell. She put a crust covered with fresh hot gravy down on the table and started to cut it into smaller pieces. "Would you like to sit here? We'll just make this a little easier to chew, yes?" she said, speaking loudly, the way people who work with old people learn to. She smiled, and the scars tugged at her full lips. No. He'd put her here, with these people who adored her, where she could afford to share a crust. Eline had made her own choices to become who she was, but he had made those choices possible. If there was one good thing he'd done, it was this. He closed his eyes and breathed deeply. When he opened his eyes and looked at her without guilt darkening his vision, she was stunning. Eline's hair was lustrous gold. Aside from the scars, her skin was flawless, eyes large and bright, cheekbones high, lips full, teeth white, neck slender, figure entrancing. She was leaning forward to cut the crust for him, her bodice gapping in front. Kylar took his eyes away, trying to slow his pulse. She noticed his sharp move and looked at him. He met her eyes. Her look was quizzical, open. He was going to ask this woman to betray her employer? A tangled snarl of emotions that he'd kept shoved into some dark corner closet of his soul surged and burst through the doors. Kylar choked on a sob. He blinked his eyes hard. "Get a hold of yourself." Eline put her arm around him, heedless of his filthy clothing and stench. She didn't say anything, didn't ask anything. Just touched him. Tingles shot through him, and his emotions surged again. "Do you know who I am?" Kylar asked. He didn't use the beggar voice. Eline Cromwell looked at him strangely, uncomprehending. He wanted to stay hunched, to hide from those gentle eyes, but he couldn't. He straightened his back and stood up and stretched his fingers. "Kylar?" she asked. "It is you. What are you doing here? Did Mags and Elena send you? Oh my God, what did they tell you?" Her cheeks flushed and her eyes lit with hope and embarrassment. It wasn't fair that a woman could be so beautiful. Did she know what she was doing to him? Her face was the face of a girl surprised by a boy in the best way. Oh, gods! She thought he was here to ask her to Mags's party. Eline's expectations were about to meet reality like a toddler charging the Alatiran cavalry. "Forget Kylar," he said, though it pained him. "Look at me, and tell me who you see." "An old man?" she said. "It's a very good costume, but it isn't a costume party." She flushed again as if she were presuming too much. "Look at me." doll girl. His voice was strangled. She stopped, transfixed, peering into his eyes. She touched his face. Her eyes went wide. "Azoth," she whispered. She put a hand on the table to steady herself. "Azoth!" She flung herself at him so fast he almost tried to block her attack. Then she was squeezing him. He stood stock still, his mind refusing to understand for a long moment. She was hugging him. He couldn't make himself move, couldn't think, he simply felt. The smooth skin of her cheek brushed his scruffy, unshaven one. Her hair filled his nostrils with the clean scent of youth and promise. She hugged him fiercely, the notes of strong, hard arms joining with supple, firm stomach, and back joining with the pure feminine softness of her chest pressed against his, making a chord of perfect acceptance. Tentatively, he lifted his hand from his sides and touched her back. He tasted salt on his lips. A tear. His tear. His chest convulsed uncontrollably, and suddenly he was sobbing. He grabbed her, and she squeezed him harder still. He felt her crying, staccato breaths shaking her slender frame, and for a moment, the world was reduced to a single hug. Reunion. Joy. Acceptance. "Azoth? I heard you were dead," Aline said, all too soon. "You will always be alone." Kylar froze up. If tears could stop halfway down a cheek, his would have. He released Aline deliberately, stepped back. Her eyes were red, but still shining as she dabbed her tears away with a handkerchief. A sudden desire to sweep her into his arms and kiss her crashed over him in a wave. He blinked, held himself still until reality could reassert itself. He opened his mouth, couldn't say a thing, couldn't ruin it. He tried again, ready to lay out his lies. Couldn't. Relationships are ropes. Love is a noose. "Durzo told me. He gave me a chance. I could have been a Fletcher, an herbalist. I chose this. I was ordered never to see you. By my master." His tongue was leaden. Durzo Blint. He could tell even Aline had heard of Durzo Blint. Her eyes tightened in confusion. He could see her working through it. If Durzo was his master, that meant... He saw a quick little disbelieving smile, as if she were about to say, "But wet boys are monsters, and you're not a monster." But then the smile faded. Why else would her Azoth never contact her? How else would a guild rat disappear so completely? Her eyes grew distant. "When I was hurt, I remember you arguing with someone, demanding that he save me. I thought it was a dream. That was Durzo Blint, wasn't it?"
"Yes."
"And you? Now you're what he is?" Aline asked.
"Close enough. Actually, I'm not even full-fledged horror. I'm just an assassin, a hack."
"You apprenticed with him so he would save me?" she asked, her voice barely above a whisper. "You became what you are because of me?"
"Yes. No, I don't know. He gave me a chance to leave after I killed Rat, but I didn't want to be afraid anymore, and Durzo was never afraid, and even as an apprentice he paid me so well that I could..." He stopped. Her eyes narrowed as she puzzled it out.
"That
that you could support me," she finished. She put her hands over her mouth. He nodded. "Your beautiful life is built on blood money." What was he doing? He should be lying to her. The truth could only destroy. "I'm sorry. I shouldn't have told you.
You're sorry?"
Eileen interrupted him. He knew what the next words out of her mouth would be. "You're a failure. Look at what you've done to me."
"What are you talking about?" she asked. "You've given me everything. You fed me on the streets when I was too young to find food for myself. You saved me from Rat. You saved me when your master was going to let me die. You put me with a good family who loved me."
"But aren't you mad at me?" She was taken aback.
"Why would I be mad at you?"
"If I hadn't been so arrogant, that bastard wouldn't have come for you. I humiliated him. I should have been watching. I should have protected you better."
"You were 11 years old," Eileen said.
"Every scar on your face is my fault. Gods, look at you. You would have been the most beautiful woman in the city. Instead, you're here giving crusts to beggars."
"Instead of where?" she asked quietly.
"Do you know any girls who've been prostitutes since they were children?" "I do. I've seen what you saved me from, and I'm grateful for it every day. I'm grateful for these scars."
"But your face..." Kylar was on the edge of tears again.
"If this is the worst ugliness in my life, Azoth, I think I'm pretty lucky."
She smiled, and despite the scars, the room lit up. She was breathtaking. "You're beautiful," he said. She actually blushed. The Drake sisters were the only girls Kylar knew who blushed, and Sira didn't blush anymore.
"Thank you,"
she said, and touched his arm. At her touch, shivers went through him. He looked into her eyes, and then he blushed too. He'd never been so mortified in his life, blushing. That only made it worse. She laughed. Not a laugh at him in his discomfort, but a laugh of such innocent joy it pained him. Her laugh, like her voice, was low, and it brushed over him like a cool wind on a hot day. Then her laughter passed, and a look of profound sorrow stole over her face.
"I'm so sorry, Azoth. Kylar, I'm sorry for what you've had to pay to put me here. I don't even know what to think. Sometimes it seems the God's hand doesn't reach very far into the Warrens. I'm sorry."
She looked at him for a long time, and another tear tracked down her cheek. She ignored it, just absorbing him.
"Are you a bad man, Kylar?"
He hesitated, then said, "Yes."
"I don't believe you," she said.
"A bad man would have lied." "Maybe I'm an honest villain." He turned away.
"I think you're still the boy who shared his bread with his friends when he was starving."
"I always took the biggest piece," he whispered.
"Then we remember differently,"
Eileen said. She heaved a deep breath and brushed her tears away.
Are you here for work?"
It was a shot in the solar plexus. "There's a wet boy coming to kill someone at the party tonight and steal something. I need an invitation to get in."
"What are you going to do?" she asked.
In truth, Kylar had barely thought about it. "I'm going to kill him," he said. And it was the truth. Hugh Gibbet was the kind of twist who started killing beggars when he had to go too long between jobs. He needed murder like a drunkard needs wine.
If Kylar came and stole the silver kakari first, Hugh Gibbet would come after him. He was a full wet boy, and reputed to be as strong of a fighter as Durzo. Kylar's only chance to kill him would be to catch him off guard. Tonight. Eline still didn't look at him.
If you're a wet boy, you've got other ways to get in. You must know forgers. Kylar Stern must have contacts. Maybe an invitation from me would be the easiest way in, but that's not why you came. You came here to case the place, didn't you?
His silence was answer enough.
All these years,
Eline said, turning her back.
I thought Azoth was dead. And maybe he is. Maybe I helped kill him. I'm sorry, Kylar. I'd give my life to help you, but I can't give you what's not mine to give. My loyalty, my honor belongs to the god. I can't betray my lady's trust. I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
It was a gentler banishment than he deserved, but banishment all the same. Kylar hunched and curled his fingers into arthritic claws and left. He turned once he reached the gate, but Eline wasn't even watching him go. Chapter 37. Like all good ambushes, this one came at a time and place where they least expected it. Solon and Regnus and his men had made it down the mountains, over the central plains, and had come within 2 miles of Cenaria's sprawling northern edge. Duke Gyre and his men were between 2 wide rice paddies on the raised road when they came upon a man leading a cart horse. Several peasants were working in the paddies, but they were dressed simply, trouser legs rolled up to their knees, obviously devoid of armor or weapons. The carter pulled his old horse to the side, looking at the men in armor intently. Solon should have noticed it earlier, of course. Peasants didn't wear long sleeves into the paddies, but it wasn't until he was within 20 paces of the carter that he saw it. The Verdmeister dropped the horse's reins and brought his wrists together, green fire roaring down his veer and filling each hand. He clapped his wrists together, and witchfire spurted forward. The witchfire hit the guard to Solon's left and went right through him. The magic was designed to melt off in layers like an icicle as it punched through each man. It was the size of a man's head as it went through the first man, then the size of a man's fist as it hit the second, then the size of a man's thumb as it hit the third. In an instant, all three were dead, flames roaring off their flesh, burning on the blood that spilled out of the men as if it were oil. A second later, witchfire hit the guards from each side as a Verdmeister on either side of the road hurled death into their midst. Another 3 men dropped. That left Solon, Duke Gyre, and 2 guards. It was a tribute to the men's discipline that they did anything at all, but Solon knew they were doomed. 1 guard rode right. Duke Gyre and the other guard rode left, leaving Solon to take care of the Verdmeister on the road. Solon didn't move. The Verdmeister had set their ambush so they'd have ample time to get off 2 or 3 balls of witchfire. 12 swordsmen were no match for 3 witches. There was no time to weigh the consequences, not even time to draw the sunlight streaming onto the paddies into magic. Solon drew directly on his Glorvirden and threw 3 tiny sparks through the air. They flew as fast as arrows, and somehow avoided hitting the Duke or his guards. Both Verdmeisters were gathering green fire again as the sparks, each hardly as big as a fingertip, touched their skin. They weren't even close to lethal. Solon didn't have enough magic to face even 1 Verdmeister alone, much less all of them together. But the sparks shocked them. A small shock, but enough to tense their muscles for a second and totally break their concentration. Before they could gather their wits, Three swords descended with all the force of three galloping horses and three battle-hardened arms, and the two witches to either side of the road died. Solon threw the spark at the witch on the road last, and the man blocked it. Indeed, it wasn't so much blocking as merely snuffing. The spark flew toward him, and then died, as if it were a fiery twig being dropped in the ocean. His counterattack was a gush of fire that roared toward Solon with the sound and rage of a dragon's breath. There was no blocking it. Solon flung himself from the saddle and threw another spark as he fell to the ground and rolled off the road. The witch didn't even bother to quench the sparks as it flew a good 10 feet wide of him. He turned, bridling almost 50 feet of fire, as if it were a living thing, and turned it in his hands to follow Solon. The spark hit the cart horse's flank. The old beast was already terrified by the blood, the sounds, and the flash of unnatural fire. It jerked against the cart, and then reared and lashed out with its hooves. The Werdmeister never even heard the horses whinny beneath the roar of flames. One second, he was raining the stream of fire down the bank of the road onto Solon, and the next, a hoof caught him in the back. He dropped on all fours, not knowing anything but that something was terribly wrong. He gasped and turned to see the horse regain its balance. Then horse and cart ran right over the man, crushing him into the road. Solon pulled himself out of the water and mud of the rice paddy as the cart horse ran as it must not have run in 10 years. His own horse was dead, of course, its skull a smoking ruin and the smell of burnt hair and cooked meat mingling over its half-ruined corpse. The witch fire was barely smoldering on the bodies of the dead guards now. Even as he watched, it guttered out. Witchfire spread horribly fast, but only lasted about 10 seconds. 10 seconds? Has it only been that long? The sound of hooves brought Solon back into reality. He looked up at Duke Gyre, whose face was still and hard. "You're a mage," the Duke said.
"Yes, my lord,"
Solon said heavily. The lines were written now by Solon's silence. The Duke had no choice. Confronted with such a surprise, a more clever man would have pretended to have known Solon was a mage all along. Then he could have decided what to do with him later. Duke Gyre was too straightforward for that. It was his strength and his weakness.
"And you've been reporting on me to other mages?"
Only to friends, my lord."
It was weak, and it made him sound weak to say it, Solon knew. But he couldn't imagine that it could all disappear like this. Surely his friendship with Regnus, surely 10 years of service, were worth more than this.
"No, Solon," Duke Gyre said. "Loyal vassals don't spy on their lords. You've saved my life this day. But you've been betraying me for years. How could you?"
"I wasn't."
"For my life, I give you yours. Begone. Take one of the horses and go. If I ever see your face again, I'll kill you."
"Stay with him," Dorian had said. "His life depends on it. A kingdom depends on it. By your word or silence, a brother king lies dead."
But he'd never said how long Solon had to serve his Lord Gyre, had he? Solon bowed low in front of his friend and took a bridle from Gurdon, who looked too stunned for emotion. Solon mounted and turned his back on Lord Gyre.
"Did I save Cenaria today? Or doom it?"
Chapter 38. Kylar's afternoon had been frantic. He'd had to get Logan to get someone else to get him an invitation, and then, when he'd tried to find Durzo, the wet boy was gone, leaving a typically terse note.
"On a job."
Durzo didn't often give Kylar a lot of detail about his jobs, but lately, Kylar felt that he was being more and more excluded, as if Durzo were trying to create space between them, so that it would be easier to kill Kylar when the time came. Durzo's absence had meant that Kylar didn't have to confess to talking with Eileen, botching it, and probably tightening security at the Jadwin estate all at once, so it wasn't altogether a bad thing. Now, because he'd told Logan he was coming to the party, he had to come without a disguise. But because he'd told Eileen he was coming, if she saw him, she'd report him immediately. That was why he'd come in a carriage, even though it would seem odd for a young noble alone not to ride. The carriage stopped at the gate, and he handed his invitation to Bert. The man didn't recognize him, of course. He just looked over the invitation carefully and waved him in. Kylar was glad to see the man. If he was still guarding the door, that meant that the Jadwins didn't have enough guards to replace all the ones who'd worked earlier in the day and still guard the party. Maybe they hadn't believed Eileen. After all, how would a serving girl know about the plots of wet boys? Kylar took one step out of his carriage and froze. The carriage directly in front of his was open, and a whip-thin man was stepping out of it. It was Hugh Gibbet, all in chocolate leather and silks like a lord, long blonde hair combed and gleaming, smiling with the disdain of a man superior to those around him. Kylar ducked back into his carriage. So it was true. He counted to 10, and then, afraid that his driver would wonder what he was doing and maybe call attention to him, he stepped out of the carriage himself. He saw Hugh disappearing inside. Kylar followed, producing the invitation again for the guards in front of the monstrous white oak door.
"So have you gotten the old goat's permission?" Prince Aelin asked.
Logan looked at his friend on the other side of the long table, heaped high with every delicacy the Jadwins thought would impress their guests. The table was near one of the walls of the vast great hall of white marble and white oak. Against the monochrome background, the nobles were a riot of color. Several of the realm's most influential hecatonarchs, priests of the hundred gods, mingled in their myriad colored robes. A band of minstrels in flamboyant cloaks and makeup fought for attention with lords and ladies, high and low. Tara Grayson had shown up to the last big party 2 weeks ago in a scandalously low-cut red gown with a soaring hem. Tara was eighth in line for the throne after the prince, the Gunder daughters, Logan, and her father, Duke Grayson, and she adored the attention her position gave her. Her daring had touched off a new fashion, so this week all the gowns were either red or dared to expose more leg or breast or both than most prostitutes did. This was fine for Tara Grayson, who was somehow able to look glamorous instead of cheap. Most women weren't so fortunate. "I spoke with the Count this morning," Logan said, when he was suddenly silenced as breasts went past. No, not just breasts. The breasts. They were perfect. Not precipitously exposed, but perfectly shaped. These floated past him, held in a gossamer embrace of fabric, rejoicing to cling to such nubile curves. Logan didn't even see the woman's face. Then, as she walked past, the sweet curves of swaying hips and a flash of lean, muscular calves.
"And?"
the prince asked. He looked at Logan expectantly, holding a plate with little samples of every delicacy on the table.
"What did he say?"
Logan's face flamed. Too much time in the wilds, except that that wasn't really true. His eyes seemed unattached to his mind at all, controlled directly from elsewhere. He moved further down the line, trying to remember what he'd been saying. his plate still empty, as he rejected a few delicacies fricasseed, flambéed, or frosted. He said, "Ah, my favorite!" Logan started heaping strawberries on his plate, grabbed a bowl, and filled it with chocolate fondue.
"Somehow I'm sure whatever Count Drake said, it wasn't, ah, my favorite,"
Prince Aline said, arching an eyebrow. "If he said no, you don't have to be embarrassed. Everyone knows Count Drake is a little off. Their family mixes with commoners." He said yes.
"Like I said," the prince said, "he's a little off."
He smiled and Logan laughed.
"When are you going to propose?"
"Tomorrow. It'll be my birthday. Then no one can stop me."
"Does Sira know?"
the prince asked.
"She suspects that I might do it soon, but she thinks that I need some time to consolidate my household and speak with my parents about it first."
"Good."
"What do you mean?" Logan asked. They had reached the end of the long table. The prince stepped close to him.
"I want to give you a birthday present myself. I know you've got feelings for Sira, and I respect that, but Logan, you're a duke's son. Tomorrow you'll become one of the most powerful men in the realm, behind only the other dukes in my family. My father would love for you to marry Sira, and we both know why. If you marry her, you'll set your family back from the throne for 2 generations.
"Your Highness," Logan said, awkward. "No, it's true. My father fears you, Logan. You are admired, respected, even held in awe here. That you've been gone half of every year hasn't alienated you like my father hoped. Instead, it's made you romantic. The hero, all fighting for us on the borders, keeping the Caladorans at bay." "The king fears you, but I don't, Logan. His spies look at you and they can't believe that you are what you appear to be, a scholar, a fighter, and a loyal friend of the prince. They're schemers, so they see schemes. I see a friend. There are those who would destroy your family, Logan, by any means, and they won't tell me what they're planning. But I won't allow it. In fact, I'll do all I can to stop it." He looked down, grabbed a bit of fried plantain off a plate. "I'm here tonight to do a favor for my father. In return, he promised to give me whatever I ask. Whatever I ask."
"That's some favor," Logan said.
The prince waved a hand. "King Stupid gave my mother's favorite jewel to his mistress. I'm here to get it back. It doesn't matter. You know my sister?"
"Of course."
Janine was here somewhere. She was usually described as sunny, very pretty, and very 15. "She's smitten with you, Logan. She's been in love with you for 2 years. Talks about you all the time."
"You're joking. I've barely exchanged 2 words with her."
"So what?" the prince said. "She's a great kid. She's pretty, only getting prettier, and she has my mother's intelligence. I know how important that is to you, my vituperative friend."
"I'm not vituperative," Logan said.
"See? I don't even know if you are or not. I just grabbed the biggest word I know." "But Jenny would."
"What are you saying, Your Highness?"
"Janine's your birthday present, Logan. If you want her, marry her. Just give me the word."
Logan was stunned.
That's quite a birthday present."
"Your family will be restored. Our children will grow up together. One of your grandchildren could share the throne with one of mine. You've been the best friend a man could ask for, Logan, and friends are something most princes don't get. I want to do well by you. You'll be happy, I promise it. Janine is turning into an amazing woman, as I think you've noticed."
The prince nodded. Logan saw her then, looking at him across the room, and he realized he'd already seen her tonight, or at least her breasts. His face flamed. He tried to summon words, but they abandoned him. Janine stood there across the room with the elegance of a woman far older, at least until one of her friends said something to her and she started giggling.
The prince laughed. "Say yes, and you can do all the things you were imagining a minute ago. Legitimately."
I... Logan's jaw worked. "I'm in love with Sira, Your Highness. Thank you for your offer, but... Logan, do everyone a favor. Say yes. Your parents will be overjoyed. Your family will be saved. Janine will be ecstatic. You didn't tell her, did you?"
"Of course not, but think about it. Sira's great, but let's be honest, she's kind of pretty, but she's not as smart as you like. And you know what the rumors say about her getting around."
"She's the opposite of a loose woman, Aline. She hasn't even more than kissed me."
"But the rumors..."
"The rumors are because people hate her father. I love her. I'm going to marry her."
"Excuse me?"
a young blonde said. She slid between them and brushed past the prince to reach for a sweet roll. She was a scandal in red. The friction between her chest and the prince's nearly pulled her breasts free of her dress, which had something more like a navel line than a neckline. The prince noticed. Logan saw. But then he usually did. And so did Logan.
"I'm Viridiana," the girl said, catching the prince's eyes as they came back up. "I'm so sorry. Excuse me."
Not that it was an apology. Not that it was an accident. Viridiana slipped back into the crowd, her dancer's body carrying the prince's eyes and his thoughts away from Logan.
"Well, think about it. Let's talk tomorrow before you ask," the prince said, watching Viridiana head out to the back porch.
She looked over her shoulder, and seeing him looking, smiled. The prince looked down at his plate, piled high with a little bit of each delicacy on the table. Then he looked at Logan's, piled high with just one thing.
"This, my friend," the prince said, "is the difference between us. If you'll excuse me, I've seen a dish I simply must sample."
Logan sighed. His eyes fell on Janine again, who was still looking at him. It looked like her friends were urging her to go talk to him.
Damnation! Where's Sira?
Chapter 39. There were guards on every stair. This wasn't good news. Kylar had made his way surreptitiously through the party, trying to look so ordinary that no one would give him a second glance. But it wasn't easy, especially doing it while keeping an eye out for Hugh Gibbet, who most likely was doing the same thing. If Hugh saw him, Kylar would lose the only advantage he had. He made his way onto the back porch. Normally he would have avoided it, because it was liberally strewn with couples. If one thing was guaranteed to make you feel lonely, it was seeing other people kissing passionately in an alcove in the moonlight. Now, though, Kylar was looking for a way to the second floor. A balcony hung just above the porch, and if he could figure out a route, he could climb to it quickly enough that no one would even notice. Of course, once he was upstairs, he'd still have to find the Kakari, but he bet it was in the Duchess's room. People liked to keep their favorite jewels close. The wall had no trellises. Maybe he could jump off the rail and vault off the wall high enough to grab the edge of the balcony, a good 15 feet above. He could probably do it, but he'd have to get it on the first try. If he fell, no one would be able to ignore the noise he made when he crashed through the rose bushes below.
Still, it's better than standing here.
Kylar breathed deeply.
Kylar?
It was a woman's voice. "Kylar, hello! What are you doing here?"
Kylar turned, guiltily. "Sira, hello." She looked like she'd spent all day getting ready for the night. Her dress was modestly cut, but classic, beautiful, and obviously far more expensive than anything Count Drake could afford. Wow, Sira, that dress. She smiled and glowed, but only for a moment.
Logan's mother gave it to me.
He turned and grabbed the rail. Across the river, behind high walls, the castle towers gleamed in the moonlight, as near and unreachable as Sira herself. She came and stood beside him. She said,
"You know, Logan is going to..."
"I know." She put her hand on his. He turned and they looked into each other's eyes.
"I'm so confused, Kylar. I want to say yes to him. I think I love him, but I also..."
He swept her into his arms roughly, throwing an arm around her back and a hand behind her neck. He pulled her to him and kissed her. For a moment she gasped, and then she was kissing him back. In the distance, as if all the way across the river somewhere in the castle, he heard a door slam, but it was so far away, surely it didn't matter. Then he felt Sira stiffen in his arms and pull back. A hand clapped on Kylar's shoulder, not gently.
"What the hell are you doing?"
Logan shouted, spinning Kylar around. Heads popped out of nooks, and the porch went still. Kylar saw the prince's head among them.
"Something I should have done a long time ago," Kylar said.
"You mind?"
"Oh, shit,"
the prince said. He started trying to disentangle himself from the young blonde who was wrapped around him in an alcove. Kylar turned away from Logan as if to kiss Sira again, but Logan hauled him back around. Kylar's fist came first and caught Logan on the jaw. The big man stumbled back and blinked his eyes. Sira shrank away, horrified, but she was already forgotten. Logan came forward, his hands up like a proper boxer. Kylar dropped into an unarmed fighting stance. Wind through aspens. Logan came in and fought as Kylar knew he would. Honorably. His punches came in above the belt, textbook jabs and hooks. He was fast, far faster than he appeared. But fighting in such a rule-bound style, he might as well have been a cripple. Kylar wove in among his punches, brushing them aside, falling back slowly. A crowd gathered in moments. Someone shouted that there was a fight, and people started pouring outside. The guards, admirably enough, were the first ones out. They moved forward to stop them.
"No," the prince said.
"Let them fight." The guards stopped. Kylar was so surprised he didn't dodge, and the next punch knocked the wind out of him. He staggered back as Logan came in, his weight on his toes, crowding Kylar back against the railing. Kylar gasped a few breaths, blocking his friend's punches with difficulty. As his wind returned, rage swept over him. He blocked a punch up, ducked beneath it, and rained four quick punches on Logan's ribs, sliding away from the railing. Logan turned and swept a gale through the air with a huge roundhouse. Stepping forward at the same time, Kylar dropped beneath the blow and flicked a foot into Logan's pelvis. Instead of taking a step, Logan found that his foot wasn't where he'd told it to be. He fell. Then Kylar's fist caught him across the face, and he crashed to the ground.
"Don't get up,"
Kylar said. There was a stunned silence from the crowd, followed by murmurs. They'd never seen anything like what Kylar was doing. But however effective it was, it wasn't noble to kick a man while boxing. Kylar didn't care. He had to finish this immediately. Logan got up on his hands and knees, then on his knees, obviously about to stand. Gods,
It was just like in the arena. Logan didn't know when to stay down. Kylar kicked him in the side of the head, and he went down hard. Sira rushed forward to Logan's side.
"Well, Sira, you always wanted us to spar. Looks like I win."
Kylar smiled triumphantly at her. The murmurs started immediately, all of them disapproving. Sira slapped him with a crack that rattled his teeth. "You aren't half the man Logan is." She knelt by Logan, and Kylar could see that he'd suddenly ceased to be part of her world. He straightened his tunic and cloak and pushed through the crowd. The First Rose stepped back for him, as if even touching him would bring them shame. But as he pushed his way inside, people were still pushing outside, desperate to see the fight that they didn't know was already finished. Within a few feet of the door, he became just another noble in the crowd. He followed a wall to the servants' staircase, which was now unguarded, and went upstairs.
Well, that hadn't exactly been a roaring success. It had cost him his reputation and had quite possibly revealed his presence to Hugh Gibbet, but it had gotten him up the stairs. And for now, that was all that mattered. He could worry about the consequences tomorrow. The rest of the job would be easier. It had to be. Right? Hugh Gibbet had been tempted to head up the stairs as soon as the guards abandoned them to go break up some fool noble's fight. The unguarded stairs were a temptation, but he was confident of his skills. Besides, his plan would still work, and it would give him information he couldn't get if he walked upstairs now. Lady Jadwin was standing near the doors of the porch, either distraught or pretending to be. It was one of those little mysteries of life that the king had chosen her as his mistress. Surely there were more attractive women who would sleep with a king, even this king. Lady Jadwin was living proof of the hazards of inbreeding. She was a tall woman with a horse's face, large enough and old enough that she certainly didn't belong in the dress she was wearing tonight, and known to be sexually voracious by everyone in the kingdom, except her husband. He figured that the distress was an act. Lady Jadwin was a passionate woman, but generally unflappable. This would probably be her excuse to go upstairs. There. She spoke briefly to one of her guards, then went back to apologize to the guests streaming back in from outside, most of them disappointed at having missed the fun. The guard, having the subtlety of most guards, walked directly to the guard just now resuming his post at the servant's stair. He leaned close and whispered an order. The man nodded. Meanwhile, the Duchess waited until the prince came through the door. She spoke a few words to him, then began feigning more distress as he disentangled himself from a young blonde hanging on his arm. After a few more seconds, the Duchess excused herself, told her husband that she wasn't feeling well, turned down what must have been an offer to send someone with her, and went up the grand stair by herself. Doubtless, she'd told him she just needed to lie down for a little while. "Enjoy the party, dear," she said, or something. The prince was more circumspect, but not difficult to follow. He made his way to the sweetmeats, chatted with a few ladies, politely excused himself and walked to the washroom, which was just down the hall from the servants' stair. He emerged from the dark hallway a minute later, looked quickly to see that no one was looking at him, and walked past the guards, who pretended not to see him. Hugh followed hard on the prince's heels, wrapping himself in shadows. The guard was so busy not seeing the prince, the wet boy probably could have slipped past him even without them. The servant's stair opened on a grand hallway by the duke's chambers. The floors were the same white marble, with the middle of the hall covered by a red carpet for its entire length, all the way from this wing to the opposite one, where the Duchess's chambers were. The lights were dimmed as a visual redirection,
for the guests who might have been at past parties where both floors were open to guests. Kylar had no idea how long he had to get the globe of edges, but he was sure faster was better. It occurred to him that he wasn't the only person who might have seized the opportunity of the stairs being unguarded. Hugh Gibbet might already be upstairs. The only advantage Kylar had, he hoped, was that Hugh probably wasn't coming just for a smash and dash. He was probably coming to kill someone. If that had been Kylar's goal, the simplest way would be to wait until the Duchess gave the Kakari to the King's agent, whoever it was, and then kill both of them. That way, Hugh would get to satisfy his bloodlust, and he would kill the two people who knew for sure what had happened. The King wouldn't know if the jewel had been stolen or not, and would have no way to ask without publicly acknowledging that Lady Jadwin was his mistress. If that guess was right, Kylar had until Lady Jadwin came upstairs to get the Globe of Edges. It might be another hour. Or it might be 2 minutes. Halfway down the hallway, a guard was walking toward him. Kylar stepped backward into the corner where the shadows were deeper. But then the guard turned and walked down the grand staircase. It was Kylar's chance. He walked forward quickly, with no attempt at stealth. His chest tightened as he stepped past the one area of the hallway that was well lit. The landing at the top of the stairs was bathed in light, but with 6 steps, eyes locked straight forward, he made it across. The corridor was lined with disturbing sculptures and excellent paintings. Unless Kylar missed his guess, the Duke was something of an artist. The brilliant and diverse paintings were obviously selected by a man with a keen eye and a deep purse. Though similarly striking, the sculptures were unmistakably the product of one vision. Pained figures appeared to be tearing themselves from the rock. One stumbling woman looked over her shoulder with terror writ in every feature. A man raged at the cloud of black marble that enveloped his hands. A nude woman lay back erotically into the cloud devouring her, rapture on her face. Even in the hurry Kylar was in, the sculpture stopped him in his tracks. It was beautiful. Devastating. It mixed sensuality with something unsettling that Kylar couldn't identify. And it was unmistakably Eline. So that's how it is. Kylar felt as if something were tearing the lining of his stomach. It felt empty. Raw. Of course she sleeps with him. He's a duke. She's a servant. And it's hard to say no. Even if she wanted to. Maybe she didn't. It happens all the time. He looked at the statue closely, giving a cursory glance to the supple limbs, narrow waist, and high breasts, and found what he was looking for. Though he'd given her a perfect nose with the lightest of scratches, the Duke had hinted at the scars on her face. So the man didn't just see them as imperfections. He was interested in the mysteries beneath. There isn't time for art appreciation, damn you! With a lump in his throat, Kylar jogged down the hall on the balls of his feet. He grabbed the pouch from his back and had his picks out by the time he reached the door. No light or sound came from the room, so he picked the lock quickly. It had only 3 pins, so it opened in 3 seconds. Kylar stepped inside and locked the door after himself. If Hugh came to the door, he'd have 3 seconds' warning before the wet boy came. Kylar drew the bollock dagger he'd strapped to the small of his back. The blade was 1 foot long, and he'd prefer something 10 times its size if he had to fight Hugh, but it was the best he'd been able to smuggle in. He cased the room quickly. Most people, aware of the number of difficulties already present in a thief's life, were kind enough to use the same few hiding places. Kylar checked the mattress, behind the paintings, even the floor under the bureau, and several of the chairs for trap doors. Nothing. He checked the writing desk's drawers for false bottoms. Still nothing. Most people who kept items of great value wanted to be able to check on them without much hassle, so Kylar didn't even go into the enormous closet. Unless Duchess Jadwin was comfortable handing her most prized possession to a servant, the globe would be somewhere easily reached. It didn't help that the Duchess seemed to be quite the collector. There were knick-knacks everywhere, and flowers, probably brought in for the Duke's homecoming, sprouted from every flat surface in the room, obscuring Kylar's view. So the Duke bought his wife some flowers, and, from the musky smell in the air and the rumpled covers on the bed, apparently had been welcomed home enthusiastically. Then, one of the vases caught Kylar's eye. It was ornately carven jade. But more importantly, it had a square base. Kylar picked it up from the writing desk. Roses, spray roses, stargazer lilies, and snap serpents splayed every which way. Ignoring the flowers, he took it to the mantel and pushed aside a hardwood jewel box. There was an indentation in the stone of the mantelpiece. A square indentation. Kylar felt a surge of hope. The prophet was right. The base fit the indentation, and Kylar turned it. There was a muffled click. Kylar pulled all the knick-knacks off the mantel and put them on the ground. On hidden hinges, the entire mantelpiece opened up. Ignoring the documents and gold bullion, Kylar grabbed the jewelry box. It was large, large enough to hold the globe of edges. Kylar opened it. Empty. Gritting his teeth, Kylar replaced the case and closed the mantle. So, there was his lesson in prophecy. A square vase will give you hope, Dorian had said. He hadn't said that it would turn out to be a false hope. Damn! Kylar paused long enough to fit a knockout needle into a small trap, just in case Hugh came in here instead of following the Duchess. Replacing the knick-knacks and putting the vase back on the desk, Kylar tried to think. Where could it be? Everything that could have gone wrong tonight had. The only point of light was that he hadn't seen Eline. Eline! The leaden feeling in his stomach told Kylar that he knew exactly where the Kakari was. Chapter 40. The prince felt hands grab him as soon as he stepped out of the staircase. An instant later, Lady Jadwin was pressing hot lips against his mouth. She pressed him back as he retreated until he bumped into the door of the Duke's chambers. He tried to hold her back, but she just reached past him and pulled the latch. He almost fell as the door opened behind him. She closed the door behind herself and locked it. "My lady," he said, "stop, please." "Oh, yes, I'll stop," she said, "when it pleases me. Or should I say, after you please me?"
"I told you we're finished. If my father finds out..."
"Oh, bugger your father. He's as much of a bumbler out of bed as he is in it. He'll never know."
"Your husband is just downstairs. Anyway, it doesn't matter, Trudana. You know what I'm here for."
"If your father wants his globe back, he can come get it himself," she said. She put her hand on the front of his breeches. "You know he couldn't come see you here," the prince said. "It'd be a slap in my mother's face."
"He gave it to me. It was a present."
"It's magic. My father thought it was just a stone, but Kalidor demanded it. Why would they do that if it weren't..."
"No."
He slapped her hand away as she tugged open the laces.
"I know you like it," the Duchess said.
"I do like it, but we're finished. It was a mistake, and it will never happen again. Besides, Logan is waiting for me downstairs. I told him what I was doing. The lie came out easily. Anything to get away from this woman. The worst of it was how much he had enjoyed her. The woman might be ugly, but she was more skilled than all.